in this moment, if you wanted to have a little honesty and authenticity, could you? So in this moment, the moment that exists, the moment that we're in, the moment that we're sharing together, where are my defects of character or shortcomings? It might be present right now. They might not. And so, beginning with this process of letting go, begins with a letting go of a misperception. Letting go of a misperception that I have these defects of character, or that they are a part of me. Which does not mean they don't show up, and it doesn't mean that they don't arise, and it doesn't mean that they are not habits or tendencies that are repetitive and will show up again. But the offering here is they're not present all the time. And that there's a great period of my life that they are not present. As a matter of fact, probably most of my life. So, this process of letting go is starting to let go of a misperception about how prevalent and to what degree my shortcomings are a part of my life. The more that I cling to them, make them real. I have these issues. This is the kind of person I am. This is who I am. I can drag them around with me. And there's stuff I have to work on. And in that process, I sometimes forget that much of the time I don't need to work on them. Much of the time I actually, they're not an issue in my life. And that they arise at certain times in my life, under certain circumstances in my life, in a particular way, for a temporary period of time. And then they're not there. And in between all those times, there's other aspects of myself that are present, that might be kind and patient, and things that I do like about myself, things that I feel good about, things that I recognize as valuable in my life. And unfortunately, I may spend a great deal of time not seeing any of those things. And then my defect or shortcoming arises, my habit, my tendency, this thing I do arises. And then I say, there I am again. I always do that. But the question is, do you always do that? Because what about all the times you're not doing that? Which is most of your life. So most of my life I'm not doing that. But my mind will tell me, oh, there I go again. That's how I am. And so as we begin this process of letting go of some of the habits or tendencies, rather than defects, I really prefer sort of mental afflictions or unhealthy habits or attitudes, tendencies that arise in my life. Letting go of them starts with recognizing that they're not as present and as firm as I cling to them as. That much of my life they're not here, and sometimes they are here. And that underneath all of this, and our journey, hopefully over these 3 hours, is going to allow us to have a little more direct access to my inherent goodness, the person that we are most of the time, which is free of unhealthy habits and tendencies. So we are most of the time. And that this process of learning to let go and, you know, to go right to the point of the sixth step, coming willing to, you know, really willing to have God remove these defects of character. Well, what's that mean to us? To become willing to not have some of these unhealthy habits, to become willing to not have these shortcomings. On the surface, it can seem pretty simple, like, well, of course I wouldn't want that. Wouldn't it be nice to be free of these? But why do we cling to them? So those of you that did watch the video, I was prefacing this idea of what are some of the things I cling to that I don't want to let go of that prevent me from actually being connected, being the person that I want to be, that I feel good about. And so in this process of discovering our value, being the person we want to be, I often will point out that all of us, I think, can make a list, a very clear list of the person that we want to be, or five qualities that we know that could improve our life, five things we can do. We can, you know, we can do this. We don't, there's no big mystery about how we can be a better person. There's no great mystery around what I can do to improve my life. Right? Everyone here can do that. I can give you a few minutes. You can make a list. What is it you can do to improve your life? And so we actually will get to that. And then the next question is, well, why don't I do it? That's the tricky business. What is it that prevents me from doing things that I absolutely know will improve my life? What's blocking me? And so this gets to the core of the willingness to let go of my habits and tendencies that are blocking me from being even the person I want to be, or even aspire to be in some way, shape, or form. I'm going to discover that I have a few habits and tendencies that arise, some conditioning that bit habitual, and even though I want to be this kind of person who has these kinds of qualities, I wind up not being that person or doing those things or taking the steps or engaging in the attitudes or habits that would support that kind of person that I want to be. Something is blocking me. And there's quite a few things, obviously, not just any one thing. But many of them are pretty simple in terms of steps to take. And the more challenging piece is the discipline of recognizing that you deserve to not engage in certain habits and activities, that you deserve to be free of those types of habits and tendencies. and to recognize what it is like to have nothing to hide, to know that you're enough, to know that you're okay, that you're worthy, that you're valuable, that you have much to offer the world, and that's your basic nature. And what would that be like? To have absolutely nothing to hide. To know that you're that okay. That, yeah, make mistakes. Say things that I regret. Do some things not very skillful. But I'm okay. I'm valuable. I'm worthy. Life's messy. And we're doing the best we can, just like everybody else. So for me, steps 6 and 7 become that journey of unraveling these constructs, these ideas, these perceptions about myself, these habits that really prevent me from recognizing and allowing my goodness to show, my kindness to show, my ability to connect to show. And so it begins with this idea of willingness. And willingness means that I am ready. I'm ready to be a little uncomfortable, and I'm ready to let go of a certain habit or tendency that has had me feel good on quite a bit of occasions, has been a security blanket sometimes, has given me comfort. But it's not letting me grow and flourish. So in our workshop today, with the limited time that we have, what I'd invite people to do is to spend a little time focusing on one major, and by major I don't mean like a massive thing, but like one focused habit or tendency that we've clung to, that we know is not good for us. That's holding us back in some ways. And by major, it's more encompassing. Something that kind of affects different aspects of our life. Something that we believe about ourselves, or some habit that we just haven't quite gotten willing to change yet. I'm looking at some of the names here, and I know that many of you are quite a few years in recovery as well. And I myself have some habits and tendencies I'm working on. And what I've found, though, is that there's usually one or two at any given point in my life that are really hindering other aspects of how I feel about myself. And how I get to show up for people. So we're going to have an invitation for that. I'm going to just check here. I've seen a few questions pop up here. Yeah. Mark's already all over to be entirely ready. Let's see. I have one person noting that she can't hear, but everyone else I'm sure can. So volume on this end should be fine. Okay. So in our first moments together, I wanted to have a bit of an overview of this and then invite us to do a little bit of processing for ourselves. So, given some time, just to give you a few minutes, since our time is sort of a shorter workshop today, is I'm going to just give a few minutes, probably 5 minutes, I think would be good. Given what was shared so far, can you identify something that you haven't really been willing to give up yet? Some sort of quality about yourself, some sort of idea about yourself. Now, some of these can be, people think about defects, but I think that there's qualities. So, for example, in my own life, one of the things that was very challenging for me was my insecurity around people. I'm not the idea of me being a people person wasn't not a very good construct for me. So I very, very paralyzed in terms of sharing with people in a room. And so one of the aspects of myself I had to be willing to do would be to show myself to people, to talk to people, to let down some of my shyness. And it was an area that I wanted to work on. And now I actually talk for a living, which would be kind of shocking. So when we think about what's holding us back, and let's get away from the word defects and let's think about things that are holding us back, things that are limiting. I invite you, and I'm going to, we'll take a little 5 minutes here to take a little time to reflect on what is it that, something that you want to become willing to change, to let go of. And, people can have lots of different ideas, just judgmental minds, certain habits or tendencies that we have that we don't share with others. I specifically like to dive down into what is it that I wouldn't want other people to find out about me. And, that's a core piece for me. Fundamentally, my goal in life is to have nothing to hide. I believe that, to have that level of being that I can look anyone in the eye at any time and be okay. Not worry what someone thinks about me, not worry about, reputation, image, whatever. That I deep down know that I'm showing up in a way that I feel good about. And I'm not perfect, and I make mistakes, and I put my foot in my mouth, and I'm not always as patient or as loving or as kind as I'd like to be. I'm not perfect. But I'm okay. If you found out anything about me that I did today, there's nothing to hide, really, except that I'm human. And so for me, these steps 6 and 7 have been this journey to be okay in my own skin and to become willing to let go of some of these ideas and attitudes about myself that have served their purpose previously in my life. But they don't serve a purpose anymore. They just hold me down and prevent me from doing the things that are on my list. So I'm going to pause right there, and I'm going to invite all of you five qualities. So 5 qualities about yourself that you feel really good about. Five aspects of yourself then. You really admire about yourself, qualities that are important to you. That's where we're going to begin. So I'm going to, it's 2:40. So at 2:50 my time, I'm in mountain time. So I know different people are all over. We're going to have someone from Ireland here. So 10 minutes. It's going to give you 10 minutes to think about these five qualities. Things that you really admire about yourself, that you value, that are important to you. And we'll check back here in 10 minutes. So hopefully you all had some clarity within that reflection. I know 10 minutes is not a lot of time to really identify these qualities. Even if we came up with three or came with five, that's good. But just broaching the subject that we have these qualities within us. Is there ever been a point in our life where we didn't want to be a good person? Where we didn't want to be thought of as valuable or as worthy, meaningful? At our very core, since we were a little kid, you know, didn't we want to just be okay, be a part of? I often will share that I've never met a person in my life that doesn't want to be a good person. Now, I haven't met over 7 billion people, and I haven't met everyone, but I firmly believe that I have personally never met another human being who doesn't want to be a good human being deep down. I have met a lot like me who didn't know how very well, and in my life really struggled with learning how to be okay being a good person. As a matter of fact, that was a difficult thing for me to even admit to being a nice guy. Busy trying to be a tough guy. And it's been a journey to let down some of the hardening and the walls and the barriers that have blocked me from being just a softie, being okay, being kind, being goofy. And this journey then is that if we start with recognizing that we do have goodness, that we do have these qualities about ourselves that are admirable, that we value, that they're at our core, then we want to see what's blocking that, what's blocking it from shining, and what is it that we would need to let go of to allow our qualities to shine. So some of you did see an email that had pre-registered a little video I showed, but I'm going to pop this back up here. This is a image from a very old, well-known book, a new pair of glasses, a lot of, been around a long time, Chuck C, old A guy. And I love this because it, I think, is a very clear graphic, for me, that happens to be the journey. And we've got this nice circle here, life, good, God, you know, the universe, everything in it. It's got the little dots, the human race, but everything's in there. The connection with everything is in here. And then he's got his line and Chuck's over there on the other side. So there's a line, there's me, and then there's everything that's good, wonderful, connected, the universe, love, flow. And I'm separate from that. And the separateness involves this ego, this feeling of conscious separation from. And so herein lies, I think, the core of steps 6 and 7 is, what's that line to me? What is it that I'm hanging on to that's blocking me from being in that circle? What is it that I am clinging to about myself that doesn't let me allow my natural goodness and kindness and worthiness manifest with others? What is it that keeps me separate from others, people, life, the journey? What is it that's blocking, if we were to take that circle and then put in your qualities, instead of life, good God, what if you had your qualities in there? These 5 qualities. Then we start asking the question, what is it that blocks me from allowing these qualities to be available all the time? So this is what we want to sit with for a moment. We want to narrow down a particular quality, a habit, an attribute that blocks us from allowing that aspect of us to really shine in our lives, to be connected, to be a part of. And that's going to lie within a construct of our mind about how we think about ourselves, or a habit, or a tendency, or a propensity that we have, that seems probably kind of fixed. However, nothing's fixed. Everything's changing. Everything's mutable. Everything is transitory. So even our habits and our tendencies. So that line, that ego, that is a part of how we see ourselves and the world. What is a particular habit, a tendency, a quality that is really one that we'd like to focus in on changing, that is in some way blocking those other qualities from shining? Which is going to be our next question. However, let me chime in. I see a question here pop up. So I've easily come up with 5 qualities that are important to me and which I think I manifest regularly. I have nothing to hide, and I'm okay with who I am. However, my life experiences have armored me against the hurts of the world. This armor seems to still be in place, and sometimes I think that people are in some way afraid of me, or sense something dangerous, or at least disagreeable about me. I don't know if this is a misrepresentation or a valid assessment of how people react to me. If true, I would like to lose the armor. Ah, wonderfully put. So, here's the investigation. And I think that's so well put. That consciously I can feel pretty good about myself. Consciously I can, yeah, I'm okay and I can show up for things. And yet there can be, whether it's an armor is the language that was chosen for that. I think in my aspects, I'm going to relate to me just because I know me a little better, that when I am with others, there can be some sense of tension or anxiety or having to prove myself or having someone else be more comfortable with me around them. In which case, all of those types of interactions with another, whether I'm thinking they may or may not approve of me, they may or may not like me, they may be afraid of me, they may be threatened by me, or they may, you know, whatever it is that shows up, that upon my own investigation, if I look deeper, what I have found in my life, and I can only speak for myself, is that I still wasn't quite okay with me. Right? So generally, I don't have anything to hide. You know, generally, I'm a pretty decent human being. And generally, I can be pretty comfortable with most people. However, when I look deeply at my interaction with another and there's some discomfort on my end, what I have found is that it's coming from me. It's never not been in my experience. And an example I'll give you right now on my end is that I often don't feel like I've done enough. I haven't done enough. I have aspirations to do a lot more, to help people, to do things, or to have shown up in a way, you know, to fulfill this commitment or that thing. And even though intellectually I can know that, well, I do a lot of good and I, you know, work 7 days a week but there are certain responsibilities or commitments or things that I've said I've done that I would do that I haven't done yet and I don't feel good about it. And it shows up. And so in response to your reflection, the armor that I have or the insecurities or the tension or the discomfort in a given situation with any other. In my own personal life, when I looked upon reflection, there was still something there within myself that I wasn't comfortable with. Now, whether that was something that is valid or not, that's a different thing, you know. My feeling that I didn't do enough or hadn't done or hadn't, you know, that might not be as valid. But it's there and it's subtle and it's quiet and it's underneath. And so from my own experience, this journey of recovery is to notice discomfort and explore what it is I'm viewing about myself that I don't quite accept just yet. And that's just been the case for me. And my armor arises only in defense of something that I'm not totally comfortable with. So that's what I have to offer in terms of exploring that question. I feel pretty good about who I am. I feel pretty good about the life I get to live. I feel pretty good about how I treat people. But I still have a little something down in there that said, you know, John, could have done a little better, man. You know, actually, you know, to be totally honest with all 55 other people here, rigorously honest, I don't think I do enough. I think that I have not lived up to the gifts that have been given me. And, you know, that's just this I've been given so much. I've had such great teachers. I've had access to such incredible kindness. I know more than I do. And so in my own heart, that's my journey, is to observant of that awareness of that feeling about myself, to explore it deeply. And the value to be okay that, you know, quite a bit I do that is helpful and meaningful. And the tension between what more I could do and just the limitations of a human being who's trying to find his way like everybody else. So my experience then has always been that the journey is one of recognizing deeply our own inherent value. And to be really comfortable in our own skin to a degree that at no time would my interactions with others feel or take on a role of discomfort, fear, anxiety in any way. And I found that the side effect of that in my own life is that the more comfortable I am, the easier it is for me to see the value in others, to allow others to have their own feelings, to show up and let people have their own thoughts, feelings, and views and not be threatened by them in any way. And there are times where that happens. So it's been a real gift for an insecure young man like me that came wandering into these rooms. So I hope that's helpful. It's a really thoughtful process that you had. Okay. So, coming back to the big questions here. Entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And this has been a process of starting to unravel a little bit about what's a quality or defect, something I want to let go of, something that I can be ready to work on. And there's a lot of things written about this process of becoming entirely ready. And to become ready, to become open to, is not generally a lightning strike unless we're in intense pain, in which case we can be pretty ready. But generally, there's a process of uncovering to let go. And so that's what we've been working on. I'm identifying these qualities. I'm noticing these attributes that I feel real good about, that I really want to be a regular part of how I show up in the world. And then I have some things that block me. I have some, that line. And I have habits or tendencies. And so my invitation here at this stage is, as we get ready, we have to become ready, to become willing, is to have a strong clarity about how this is limiting us. So with using, it's pretty simple, right? We got to a point where we recognize that this is destroying me and everything about me. But as we engage in recovery in this process of letting go, we have found certain aspects of ourselves that have helped us, and certain qualities that we enjoy, and we even get to develop a certain persona of the kind of person I am. And, how people like me or don't like me, and I'm this kind of person. And now I start putting on these layers of qualities, of personality, of the kind of person I am. And then this becomes that line that starts separating me. When we start right now, I'm this kind of person, I'm that kind of person. Don't you know I've got so many years in recovery, or don't you know who I've sponsored, or don't you know who my sponsor is, or don't you know, what my belief systems are, don't you know? And as we start to develop some worthiness and value, some self-esteem, a healthy sense of self, along with that healthy sense of self also comes some of these harder lines that I've earned to be this kind of person, to have this kind of a job title, or to have this kind of status. And then that becomes a sense of self where there's a lot of potential for what we call pride. And not pride in the sense of worthiness, that I know I'm worthy, but that I'm better than others at this. I'm better than others at that. And we may notice that at a meeting. Are we better than some people at a meeting? Are we better than others? And are we equally valuable, just like everybody else? Did I do horrible things in my life that got me into recovery? Yeah. Were there people there who helped me? Yeah. Did I have an incredible amount of shame? Yes. Have I been able to help others in meaningful ways? Yes. How did somewhere along the line I start to think that I'm better than somebody else when, 36 years ago, and I get into a room of 12-step meeting? Yeah, there wasn't much to climb in under that doorway. There's a good friend of mine named Ruben. He always talks about the bar is very low. You know, when we come to a meeting, the bar is very low. Thank God the bar is low, man. That, you know, everybody's welcome. Old joke in some of the meetings are, we probably tell Jeffrey Dahmer, keep coming back. You know, that a newcomer comes and we're there for them. And then, but so-and-so has 20 years. Well, we don't like them, you know. And so the investigation here to recognize that, yeah, there's maybe some people that I'm more fortunate than, but I'm not better than. Like maybe I'm more fortunate that I've had some loving, kind sponsors and guides and teachers that have helped me live in a way that I feel good about. And others haven't had such kindness shown their way, or haven't been able to overcome some of their traumas or their fears or their insecurities. That some others in our rooms might have 40 plus years and be saying the same thing they said 40 years ago. And you're like, oh, really? And this process then of, as we get better, can we get better in a way that recognizes our shared value? That my self-worthiness, my self-value can be so deep and rich that I don't need to judge you. That I can be so okay that humility is the byproduct. That if I'm really okay, I'm not comparing myself with you. I don't need to. I can learn from you and see you as another human being trying to find your way just like I am. That if I'm really okay, I can have compassion and understanding towards others. I can hold people accountable for their behaviors without belittling them as a human being or less than. That I can engage with others, understanding that they have potential for growth and change just like I have. And maybe they weren't fortunate enough to get the help I got. Maybe they weren't held or cared for when they were younger like I was. Maybe they didn't meet the right kind of people at the right time, and they're still trying to find their way. So I'm coming back to this line. Having us explore that line. Bring it back up here again. Line. It's got Chuck over there. In my case, it's John. The feeling of conscious separation from. So, as I get better, as I get healthier, as I get some sense of dignity back, some sense of understanding of my value, some sense that I actually have something to offer the world, can I develop within that big circle? Instead of having some of these subtle qualities about myself and my accomplishment start separating me, and then not allowing those types of qualities that I hold dear to be a part of my life. The journey of being in a what we call a spiritual program. Spirituality is about being connected to, not separate from. And so whatever process is to start to understand that everything I have in my life is because of others, because of all the causes and conditions, like I started our session off with, because a phone call back in 1935. And then all those people who started meetings, and those people that cleaned ashtrays back in the days, to people who showed up when they didn't want to show up, to where we could have recovery today. All of those, everything we have in our life is because of all these others, and some of those others are people we don't like. And they gave us the life we have today. So that one story, then we'll get into that thing that we want to work on. So when I was early recovery, a few years, as my home group was a bit sacrilegious, theme was Rule 62, don't take your life too seriously. So it was a pretty irreverent meeting. People threw spitballs, and we actually had rubber band guns with our names on them, some guy made, and pretty joyful, but honest and authentic, powerful meeting. It was a big meeting, and they, elected me to be secretary at one point, so I was secretary, this meeting, it was regular, it was a bit irreverent. And some people took offense to this meeting and, thought this is not the way. And that was an AA meeting. By the way, I have gone to both AA and NA. And this was early on. And they're going to tell Mr. AA on. So this guy came, his name, they call him Scottish John. Scottish John. And Scottish John came to the meeting, had a bunch of time, very strict, sponsored a lot of guys, particular way you sponsor people, how you do the program. And, it's like a little intimidated that, he's here. They're going to set us straight on how to run a meeting. And, we just did what we did. And, then Scottish John didn't say anything. He just sat there the whole time, quiet. And he came back the next week. Quiet. They did this for a few weeks. Just sat there, quiet. We did what we did. And then one day he raised his hand. And he shared. What he shared was that his sponsor had told him that if he didn't like a meeting, he should go to it till he does. And that was one of the greatest lessons of my life, was here is a man walking his talk. His program wasn't my program. But I'll tell you what, the integrity and the honor of that. And to see an example of how this person lived the qualities that he valued in his life. And didn't care what other people thought. Just did it. Whenever Scottish John had something to share, I listened. And we are in all shapes and sizes. We all have our journey. And different types of programs work for different kinds of people. But often what is limiting me is a sense of myself. That's separating me from others and not recognizing how they can teach me to be a part of my life or allow me to learn more about myself. And so as we develop, and as we get healthier, as we get more comfortable, the journey to flourishing, I think, in recovery has to do with growing up inside that circle and not out of it. So as we engage in this recognition of the gift of recovery, the life that we get to live, it's dependent on all these others and the qualities that are inherently good within us that, going back to that photo, which I like so much, life, good, God. What's keeping us from that? And so 6 and 7 for me are identifying that which I am clinging to that's separating me from, that I want to become willing to let go of. So, a couple of things that have popped up here with questions, and one of them was, what role does humility have in taking the 6 steps? So hopefully I did just address that, as humility arises as a byproduct of being truly comfortable with yourself. Humility naturally arises as we are more okay with ourselves. The other side of that coin is that we may not be so okay with ourselves, so humility doesn't arise naturally. When I'm okay, I have nothing to prove. I don't need to compete. Humility is easy. When I am not okay, then humility has got to be a conscious undertaking. And is there any of the 12 steps that are not about humility, about eliminating or reducing the ego and conscious separation from? So that's kind of what I've been harping on a little bit, is that conscious separation from. So humility then becomes this process of recognizing that what's really in my way is me. And that these 12 steps are all an undertaking of reducing that line that is separating me from. And then, do you think that what we call defects are really just values that have become distorted through self-obsession of our addiction? For example, having a confident belief in one's values can be distorted into self-righteousness. Yeah, so one aspect of what people call assets or defects, you know, they can take different sides of the coin, you know. And so one paradigm or perspective is that. But where we started this at the beginning, and what I would like to have us unpack a little bit, is to recognize that even the word defect or a thing that we have, an attribute, a quality, a habit, a tendency, is not any hardwired thing. As you pointed out, I could have a certain quality and then it turns into self-righteousness. But those are actually two different things. Having confidence and having self-righteousness are not the same thing. If we actually had confidence in ourselves, it's much easier to listen to somebody else and not feel threatened. Self-righteousness is a distortion of my insecurity, that I'm clinging to something in fear that and it won't be right if there's a different view. A misperception. So, when we notice these ideas of judgment and perception there, can we accord it more in reality? And is my reality an understanding that I am part of something much greater than myself? And I am not my defects of character. I experience them arise from time to time. And at other times they don't. And there's times that I don't feel self-righteous, and there's times that I would. But those are just events that arise in dependence upon a moment and my own level of security or insecurity at a given moment. So how do we get more comfortable being uncomfortable? And what is some of the beliefs I have that I'm clinging to or habits that are blocking me from fully showing up, being teachable, and being a part of something much greater than myself, which is life? So, my invitation here for us to take a short reflection, I've talked a bit, is to see if you can pin down one specific thing that you'd like to work on. One specific thing. One attribute, we could call it a defect. Call it a habit, we could call it a tendency. And one that has really been blocking, one that you want to become willing to let go of, one thing you'd like to change. Okay, so we'll take, I'm going to give 10 minutes, and we'll take a moment to identify that. And we'll be back in 10, so I have, well, it'll be 3:40 my time, mountain, so 40 minutes after the hour, wherever you are. It's a good question. Is low self-esteem a habit? Certainly is a habitual way of perceiving oneself. Another thought about low self-esteem. Again, we're on break, so if you're processing, I'm just answering that one question. Is that there's times we don't have it. There's times we feel pretty comfortable about who we are. So if we can say, I have low self-esteem, well, do you have it at this moment? Or do I feel less than sometimes? But there's a habit in the mind that says, I have low self-esteem. Habitual way of perceiving oneself. All right. 8 minutes. We'll be right back. All right, we'll be back live in another minute, just letting everybody have that little break and reflection. Yeah, and if anyone had a question while we're just waiting for everybody to come back, feel free. Okay. We're at 40 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. So we've unpacked a few things already. And the goal of our time together is to, you know, really try to offer a little deeper dive into this process of becoming willing to let go of that which is not serving us anymore. And this requires a pretty rigorous look at self and how I identify with self and what is really sometimes presenting as protection and actually limiting is what's happening. And in this process of uncover, discover, discard is the way Chuck C. put it way back when. Uncover, discover, discard. Some people, got a friend Peter, he calls uncover, discover, transform. But where we're starting at with this point in this process is that I cling to certain aspects of things that have limited me, that have been, you know, whether we call it a defect or an unhealthy habit or a pattern or a tendency. They're pretty well ingrained, and they happen on autopilot habitually. And so that was a really good question that Bhajan put on around low self-esteem being a habit. Well, if you really step back, when we perceive ourselves or others, and how we perceive ourselves and others, you're going to see that most of that is habitual. And just types of people, right? You know, as soon as I, you know, that kind of person. And that I'll see their bumper sticker, and you know, they're a tree hugger, or they're NRA, or they're whatever they are, right? As soon as we see a label or a sticker or the clothing they wear, we pretty much fill them in, right? We fill them in. And how we see that person is going to be just a whole big old stereotype of habit that we've kind of, beliefs and things we've been exposed to in the way that we were raised and how we have experienced our lives. And that's how I see the world. So, you know, whether I think, you know, a Chevy person or a Ford person or a, you know, Maserati person or whatever somebody is, or, you know, Harleys are cool or those are not, and Hondas are, or, you know, I love nature and trees, or, you know, I'm an urban person. What we'll find if we look more deeply in our journey is that there's a lot of habits and patterns and habitual ways of seeing others and ourselves that is just done you know, habitually. We don't really put much conscious effort into it. We don't take the time to explore underneath the surface. You know, we just wake up, we got stuff to do, we got, you know, coffee, and, you know, like, here's my breakfast, here's the things I like, here's the way I am. I'm a morning person, I'm a night person, I'm, you know, this kind of thing. And so I have this persona, this perception of myself, and I have this perception of others, and, you know, what I think about any particular group of people, you know, that's the kind of people they are, whether it's political party or cultural or ethnicity. Or subgroup, you know, like hipsters. If anyone knows what a hipster is. Subgroups, categories, goth, whatever. Rednecks. Surfers. We just got an idea about what they're like. And we didn't even question it. And we sum people up, and we sum them up, you know, by our interaction with them and by what they're wearing, and, you know, whether they pleased us or didn't please us. And so this idea of habit is rolling on all the time, and rarely do we question what's actually happening. So whether it's feelings about myself, it may or may not be true. Whether it's perceptions of others, may or may not be true. They look very confident. Well, in fact, they're very scared. I look very confident, but I'm scared. These things that go on in the world and our experiences are formed over conditioning and habit. And where that becomes very relevant in 6th and 7th step is we have some habitual ways of engaging with others and the world and perceptions of ourself. And so certain things like we'll have about ourselves, for example, you know, I can be judgmental, right? Or I can be so irresponsible, or I can be whatever, you know, that is, I'm so impatient or whatever. If I'm, have been judgmental, am I also not been judgmental? Which am I? If I'm an impatient person, have you ever been patient? Probably. I'm not good with people. Have you ever been good with people? Probably. I have low self-esteem. Have you ever felt good about yourself? Probably. Am I a people person? Other times, maybe I don't like being around people so much. Are any of these qualities or labels or ways of perceiving ourselves always there? Or do they only arise sometimes? Have you been patient? Have you been impatient? Have you been kind and loving? Have you been hateful and spiteful? Have you been compassionate? Or have you wished ill upon others? If we go through the list, will you find that you have experienced all these things, but none of those things are who you are? We've all been kind and patient. We've also been unkind and impatient. We've had some shame and low self-esteem. We've also been pretty damn good about ourselves, better than. We've been comfortable, we've been uncomfortable. This is important to recognize, because out of habit, we don't question any of that. Out of habit, we just see ourselves a particular way. We don't even recognize it. We change, and we can miss a whole lot of the goodness that we already have. So we're not paying attention. We're only focused on the thing I didn't do right. And then I have all these issues to work on. Except where are those issues right now? Well, I'll give you 5 minutes. I bet you can think of them. But maybe you weren't thinking about them a minute ago. The really transformative powers, 6 and 7, is an opportunity to stop letting go of the habitual misperceiving way that we see ourselves in the world that limit us. It's an opportunity to start recognizing we deserve to let go of that. And to start watering, nourishing, and growing those qualities and attributes that are meaningful to us and are present most of the time. And stop letting our mind get hijacked. So one of the biggest obstacles to this journey is just our mind is, our mind runs on habit, our mind runs on autopilot. Our mind, you know, is not aware of what we're doing most of the time, and it's filling in the picture all the time. And that we are very rarely present in our lives in ways that are very conscious and clear. And questioning and being aware of the values that I really want to dominate my interactions. I'm much more on autopilot and reacting to life as it's happening, and I'm in a very conditioned pattern way of being. And so if I want to start to unravel those misperceptions, those habits, tendencies, things that show up as defects, things that come out of my mouth as reactions instead of responses. Well, it's going to take a little time to be more present and aware of the qualities I want to dominate my life and those that are limiting. And so really applying some clarity to this. So taking some time today is nice. We get to identify a few things. We're going to do this little meditation here in a minute to probe a little more deeply in a very 10-minute tool that we can use to start really shifting and letting go of some of that habit of the way that we get blocked. But it's going to require a methodical, conscious effort. A willingness to let go implies that I'm willing to do something. And if I'm entirely willing to have God remove my defects of character, that's not a thought. Right? Willingness is an action. If I want to build a house and I'm willing to build a house, I'd love to build a house. Matter of fact, let's you and I talk about building a house. We'll design it together. Well, if I don't go out and build a house, you know, there's no house. Becoming entirely willing to have God remove these defects of character, well, A, you know, whatever our construct is of God. So I'm sure there's people of all different types of beliefs here, and some have very clear understanding of what God is, some very vague, some in between. And so whatever that version is for you, whether it's the divine, very connected way of living in this universe that is interdependent and giving rise to all things that we experience, or a very direct God that you can talk to directly, or a clear understanding of the very forces that give rise to allowing a flower to grow and a bee to use pollen, and the way that allows for food to grow and us to eat, something that gives rise to all these things. It gives oxygen for us to breathe and water that we can drink. Well, we're a part of all that. Well, that is never not there to help us remove our defects of character. It's always there to support us in the process, whatever that is to us. And so the willingness means I am ready to take some actions to let go of my blocking my connection to all that line. I'm willing to do some stuff to let go. Which means I'm going to actually need to attend to it. And we don't attend to it or change it by talking about it or by sharing at meetings. I mean, those are helpful to a degree. But the way that we transform those things is by taking the steps to actually stop doing these things and do these other things. But none of that's going to happen if it's not present and attentive and conscious. If my mind's on habit and autopilot, you know, I'll get better. I'll stop being like that for a little bit, then my marble goes back in the groove, and then, you know, wow, here I am, 30 plus years of recovery, and I'm still doing this thing. Because life gets comfortable, and the habits come back. And so this process is, you know, what is it to be willing, is to examine and be very clear about the real source of joy and happiness in my life, meaning and purpose. And to not forget that I deserve to not act out in that way. I deserve to not act out in an unhealthy way in my life. I deserve to not be a prisoner of my habits and my conditioning. I deserve to be able to engage in activities and behaviors that allow me to look in the mirror and feel good about who I am. I'm worth that. And I'm worth being kind to when I fall. So there's this really important piece of recognizing my value even when I fall, even when I get messy, even when I repeat a habit. And to honor myself that I don't want to do that anymore. But there needs to be the actions to bear those in mind. Which is where I'd like to get us to now. Let me just double check here. I see a few questions have popped up. Oh, very good. Sometimes I feel there's a chronic strangling sense of unworthiness, which may easily stem from old childhood trauma stuff. My role is to recognize what is truthful, although sometimes victims seem so damn comfortable. Thank you. So let's go with that. For now, at the core, I think, of everything that we've been talking about is, and maybe some of that's been addressed in what I've been sharing recently, is our unworthiness. That it's not just childhood trauma. So that's part of it. Adverse childhood experiences, that's how they call it. Conditioning patterns, and something that is hyper alert in our culture today is very strongly supported about what self-esteem is and what value is. And so this journey, and that's what I was unpacking earlier, is the recognition that everyone in our meetings, everyone that we come in contact with, ourselves, we're all doing the best we can. We all have worthiness and value. We all have something to offer the world. We're no better or no less than anyone else. And sometimes I'm more fortunate than others. And this whole journey is to start healing those insecurities and those fears and that sense of shame or unworthiness that has been a part of our experience. But even in the statement around chronic unworthiness, there's a lot of times where there's worthiness, and that is what I want to shine the light on. Because the habit of, as John was put on earlier, of low self-esteem, the habit of shame, the habit of seeing myself as unworthy, eclipses all the times I do feel worthy, all the times I do feel good about who I am, all the times I have an absence of unworthiness. All the times I'm just having fun. And so the habitual way of seeing myself as a shame-based person versus a person that has shame sometimes, or a person who has struggled with self-esteem sometimes, or a person who just once in a while, you know, just doesn't feel very valuable. But other times does. So there's an habitual way of storytelling about myself and identifying and speaking about and reifying, making real certain attitudes and thoughts about myself and my perceptions that become habit forming. And then I think that's who I am and that's how I am. Except when I'm not, which is potentially a lot of time. This requires attention, requires a piercing look at my experience of myself. Because I might be telling myself that I feel pretty good about who I am, and then I'm uncomfortable. Or I could be telling myself I feel pretty unworthy, except, wow, I did this, feel pretty good about that. And there might be this nagging little thing that's there a lot that we want to investigate, which is what you dialed right down to, is examining what's true. I am not that little kid that did that thing a long time ago. I'm a human being who once was a little kid who did that thing. That little kid did a lot of other things too. Pretty cool. So uncovering, discovering, discovering that is valuable, but also valuable is who we are today. And this bit of clarity that I think all of us can use, and comes up almost every talk, workshop, everything that ever comes into, which is what I say, it's not just childhood. Our current state of way of existing within our culture has a very prominent idea of how I feel today was who I think I should be. Man, I've got this much recovery and I'm still not like that, or I'm not like this, or I should be like that, and how I fall short. So if I compare how I feel in a given moment with how I think I should be, I'm going to fail. And it's chronic. I mean, it's just Western culture. It's You know, it's not recovery even. It's, you know, I do retreats and workshops, humanity in Western culture, and people are chronically evaluating their self-worth based on their achievements and value and status and things of that nature, and holding themselves up to this level of being and stressed and worried and fearful. So that's baked in. More accurate would be who I am today and how I feel today with how far I've come. That's an accurate assessment. Look how far we've come. Look at how we have overcome so many challenges, so many struggles, so much adversity, and how we've grown. How many times we showed up and helped people. In truth, that's the accurate assessment. I'm so glad that you pointed that out, that our journey is to look more accurately. It's not that we should be different than we are. It's that we should be able to see how far we've already come. And if you're sitting here today, you've come a long way. And we'll continue to grow. That's why we're spending a Sunday on the 6th and 7th set, because we're growing. We care. This is meaningful. We want to improve ourselves in the world. And we can throw all that out the window, thinking about how far we have to go versus how far we've already come. It's not that we need to grow more. It's that we need to recognize the growth we're already developing. That's the habit. Energy is what do I still need to work on versus what am I doing right? What we water grows. So a lot of life is about developing and growing and nurturing new and healthy habits and pathways in our minds. So that's just neuroscience. We can grow new neural pathways, new habits, new conditioning. We can rewire ourselves. We can do this habitually in a healthy and meaningful way. Or we stay stuck in the habits and the tendencies and the constructs of our mind and the way we talk and about ourselves and others. And, you know, and we can see it. We can see it in meetings, you know, still saying the same thing, you know, 10 years later and not recognizing how far we've come. So, watering the things we want to grow, creating some more clarity around the things that we are doing that are healthy, that are patient, that are worthy, that are valuable. Which, by the way, I mean, if any one of us were to do an inventory today on what you did today that was worthy or valuable versus what you did that was not, how would that play out? And I'm telling you, if you spend a few hours here on a 6 and 7 step retreat, I'm thinking the worthy category is going to be pretty good. And then the mind will say, yeah, but. Instead of just accepting that you're okay. That's pretty darn amazing that you're taking time to work on developing the qualities within yourself to be helpful to yourself and others. It's pretty darn amazing. Take a look at this other question here. Really, we're going to get to this exercise. I have a similar experience to Mark. I'm 40 years sober, and just 2.5 years ago, I had a level of anger that I couldn't control. Despite working the steps multiple times, working with others, etc., at that point, I found adult children of alcoholics and went into therapy. That armor for me seems to arise from the survival traits, which allowed me to live through childhood trauma. Would you talk about the unconscious effects, our behaviors in ways that we cannot easily see? Good, well put. And I think I've been talking about that. However, what's the piece I want to add to that? So we were talking about these unconscious ways that we keep reliving those habits and tendencies. But here's the thing about anger. Anger has a very straightforward theme. It's not complicated. Anger arises when something is thwarting what we want or how we think something should be. So when we get scared, we can be angry. Something's in our way. We think something should be a certain way. Something's blocking. It's a physical response to anger. It's physiologically, blood goes to your hands. I mean, the heart, you tighten up. We constrict. Eyes focus. You know, there's a physiological reaction to anger, and it arises when something's thwarting, obstructing our way. And it's not necessarily what I want, but it might even be like a fear, insecurity, or a thing, or how something should be blocking. So this is going to get rid of that. So to really work on anger, is to learn how to work on it when you're not angry. So there's a teaching by a Dalai Lama that it just struck me. And someone asked him, so what's the best way to work on anger? And he said, best way to work on anger is not get angry. Don't get angry. And it's like, you know. But what he meant by that was once we're angry, we're in damage control, right? You know, once we get angry, then it's like, you know, I just want to not do anything harmful, try to breathe, try to, you know, it's just damage control. But the real teaching on anger that he was getting at is that we can work on the underlying seeds that give rise to anger when we're not angry. And anger doesn't arise. If there's no seeds for anger, no cause for anger, anger does not arise. Anger arises out of a perceived threat, fear, and so forth. So that's what you were talking about, going to therapy, starting to recognize and work on some of those core things that, you know, gave rise. But all of us, whether it's unresolved, you know, old traumas or current situations that we get angry in, anger is always going to be tied to a perception, a grasping to an outcome, wanting things to be a certain way. That's why we get angry. Right? You can't have stress or anger or any of that if you're not attached to an outcome. Right? What would you get angry about if you weren't worried whether it would go this way or that way? So, one of the things that all of us can do to work on anger is to live more in reality. It's hard to be angry living in reality. Not impossible, but a lot harder. And reality is, I don't really know how the world should turn out. In reality, I don't have control over whether, you know, somebody's going to hit my car or not tomorrow, or whether or not I'm going to get, you know, cancer or not, or whether or not my, you know, any of these things. I'm not the center of the universe. That's reality. I am not God. I do not know how the United Nations should run, and I don't really have any idea who's even going to call me tomorrow. And I don't know whether something happening to me is good or bad. Do I? Well, we think we do. Lose this job, that's terrible. We get another job. I get this job pretty happy. Now I don't like that job so much. This thing happened that injured my leg, which, you know, led me to me having my wife. The events in our lives, if we look at all of the events in our life, all of them, they got us here. Were they good or bad? Do they help you grow or not? Do they help you develop the character and the strength that you have today or not? So, keeping track of time. We can really start eliminating a lot of anger by learning how to live much more in acceptance of reality. People call it radical acceptance. But there's nothing that radical, it's just accepting truth. This is what happened. Okay, how can this help me grow? And if I actually took a third step, I'm not sure what I would be angry about. And I don't say that to be trite. I mean, we're going to get angry. We're going to have these things. But we don't have to be imprisoned by a bunch of labels from my past or this or that. I can work on some of those issues. But one of the biggest things I can be doing day to day right now is starting to live in reality, which is I am not that kid anymore. And I am living in the world now, in recovery, with a lot of support. I can drink water that I have here. I have a roof over my head. I am worthy and valuable. I have come a long way. I have been successful in every single challenge in my life to get me here today. A survivor. I have a lot of inner resources, a lot of strength. And how things turn out is not in my control. But what is in my control is the opportunity to show up for any of the challenges in ways that are helpful and meaningful to the best of my ability. And sometimes it's not much. Other days it's quite a bit. I am becoming in every moment. I am not my past. And all that is just fundamentally true. But it's not the story we tell ourselves. So I can be living more in reality, understanding that all the events in my life are opportunities to grow and improve myself in the world that I live in, that if I show up to the best of my ability, as I have done so far, I'm going to continue to be okay. And how things turn out is not that relevant. What matters is how I show up. Then there's going to be a lot less to get angry about. Angry comes from a pretty strong sense of me thinking I know how things should be. And I'll tell you what, I do not know how things should be. I know how I'd like things to be. And I'll tell you, it has not turned out that way many times, and it gave me the life I have today. So letting go of an attachment to an outcome is this journey of understanding that how things turn out don't last. What always lasts is how we show up. So that's another course I teach all the time, which is the real sense of worthiness and value and joy in me. Our life comes from doing things that are joyful and worthy and meaningful. And that's all how we show up. It has nothing to do with how others treat us. And we have power over that. So we can be working on that, and what will happen is the more we live in reality, while we work on some of those other old issues, we can start eliminating the causes of anger, which is an attachment to an outcome. Because that's the real. I want things to be different than they are. That's why we're angry. Things are the way they are. All right, we really are going to get to this exercise. These are such good questions, though. Okay, thanks, Tish. All right. Okay, thanks for sharing that, Bree. Okay, so here's where we've been. We have taken a little time to reflect upon these qualities that we have about ourselves that are meaningful, purposeful, that we find value. And what I would like us to now do, and we've identified something we want to work on, something that has blocked us, something that we would like to change. So I'm going to invite you to call to mind a specific event, where that defect or habit or quality, whatever it is, that we want to change. I want a specific event where it showed up and it blocked you. And it's very clear. I want to have it very clear, not just vague. Okay, what's a specific event? So I'm going to, okay, we're at 4:20. Yeah, perfect. So 10 minutes, you know, take a little break, digest a little bit of this, but come up with a very specific event. Then we're going to do a short 10-minute meditation where we're going to bring that event into our consciousness and we're going to look at it and learn from it and let it go. Okay, 10 minutes. So at 30 minutes after the hour, so whatever hour it is for you. And we are technically on a break, but I'm going to answer Dave's question if he's still there. Reality can't piss you off. acceptance is the answer, of course. But, David, anger is a mental state. So it can only be caused from my mind. I mean, it's anger's here, it's not out there. That isn't the cause of anger. Cause is I don't want things to be like that. So acceptance, meaning acceptance doesn't mean I like it. Acceptance doesn't mean I approve of it. Acceptance doesn't think I think that's the way it should be. And so it's a good answer, Dave. But if we were to look more deeply at anger, because reality doesn't piss me off, what I'm attending to about reality pisses me off. The mind I'm bringing to that reality. So, for example, is there any event in our life, for example, anything, there's a lot of horrific things going on. We got COVID, we got all kinds of social unrest, we have all kinds of stuff going on. That's terrible. But we also have an incredible amount of good things going on, right? We actually have the infant mortality rate, it's just lower than it's ever been, education around the world, incredible amount of actual tolerance amongst cultures, greater than it's ever been. There's people helping people. I mean, just if you look at the goodness that's also taking place, the incredible reduction of killing and violence that's happened in this world since World War II, and the benefits and the great things that are happening in the world. What am I attending to? Am I attending to this one thing I don't like, or am I attending to the 100 things that are going right? Am I attending to these fires, which are horrible? Am I attending to the way people are coming to help and be there for each other in these times of crisis? How am I attending to reality? And does my mind think that reality should be that there should be no fires and there should be no unrest and there should be this thing where we all, get along and that's the way the world is? And is that reasonable? Does my mind think I shouldn't get cancer when people get cancer? life's messy for everyone. And if we start to really look at the world and our experience of it, our anger is going to rise in dependence upon what I am paying attention to about reality. And I cannot like something and learn to help or grow from it, or decide to do all my best efforts to not ever have something like that happen again. And I can do that with compassion, wisdom, not anger. There's a, I'm trying to think of the title of the book, but it's about facts. Actually, in the world that we live in today, just across the board, reading, health, less violence, less death, less killing, just across the board, across the world, it's just, you know, fractions of what it used to be. And, you know, we don't see any of that because we get the news, you know, we get this polarization and we get this little glimpse of this one thing we're focused on. And we don't actually see all the goodness that's happening every day because we're not attending to that. Which doesn't mean we shouldn't attend to the hard things, because there's hard things. But that is the deal. Acceptance means just, this is the nature of things, and I don't know how it should turn out. But acceptance doesn't mean I like it. It means I'm willing to do something about it. Acceptance is the answer to getting us into solution and compassion and wisdom. Unless I can accept it, can't do much to improve it. Well, I'm eating up our old 10-minute break on that, David. Appreciate you, David. Thank you. Okay, we are at 4:30 my time. It gives us a half an hour here. It's just a gift to be here with all of you. Such an honor. All right. So, came entirely willing to God remove these defects of character, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings. So I'm going to invite us to a very concrete process of becoming willing, and the process of engaging in how we can start asking for help. Which is going to just require, it's a short 10-minute practice, and I do have a recording of it. I'll probably make another one more specific for us here for this event, so a little different flavor to it. But it's just this practice, and you know, we'll make a recording, we'll make it available to everyone. Something that I have found just one of the most important practices that has helped change my life. And it's a 10-minute meditation, and in this meditation, I'll front load you a little bit, is we're going to bring to mind that situation that you have brought up. And we're just going to take a little time, because this is the difference between talking about something, just really spend some time to understand it, is we're going to bring ourselves to that situation, to that event, and we're going to bring to mind, with some clarity, that which is holding us back. You know, what is it that I did or said or showed up? What is it that, how did it prevent me from being the person I want to be? From, how did it limit me to investigate that? To know what it feels like. And so here's the dynamic that takes place. And here's how we heal, and here's how we rewire ourselves, literally. By bringing us into that situation in a safe place, like a meditation, we're just here, it's just us meditating. We bring that situation to mind, and then we really bring it present, so we remember what it felt like. So we have this little feeling here. Oh, I remember that. And then we ask ourselves, you know, what was really going on, you know? What gave rise to that feeling, that habit? And we probe and we ask, is this, you know, preventing me? How is it blocking me? What can I learn about myself? How clear, and I can feel that. And we gain some wisdom. We get this little layer of, oh, that's what's going on with me. And then we ask the question. This is the asking, step seven. Yeah. How would you like to be able to respond when you feel like this? So you've got this feeling, and then we're asking, we're letting go. What would be a healthy way to respond? What would be a healthy way to act? And then we practice that with this feeling. And what happens is we get to, that's called transforming unskillful events, transforming a way of being from this state to a letting go and a healthier way of acting. And in this way, we can safely practice showing up in a way that we feel good about while having an experience or a feeling, and we can start to practice that intentionally every day. And then we start rewiring a little bit, even our brains and our system here, which is allowing us to, we're asking in a moment of clarity and a moment of connection. And then we're going to take that direction. So that's our part. That's our willingness. But that source of God, good, the universe, this is where we're asking in here. Okay. So hopefully we're all up for this. So I invite everybody to just sit. Comfortable, nice straight back. It's only 10 minutes. But can pack a punch here. Let me get my little timer. All right. So we all got our situation. We're ready for this. Here. So let the bell just be an invitation. Just an invitation. Take a few moments to simply ground and relax. Just taking a few moments to come home. Let's let go of our worries and our fears or what we're going to meditate on. Let's just take a few moments to feel the chair that you're seated on or a cushion, your feet on the floor. Just the areas of contact. Just taking a few moments to ground, to allow your awareness into your body. It's like silt coming to rest at the bottom of a lake. Just grounding your awareness. With your feet on the floor, body in a chair. All the areas of contact. Nowhere to go, nowhere to be, just taking a few moments to relax and breathe. And now I invite you to bring to mind this particular event that we're going to use today. an event or this habit, this defect has shown up and has limited you. I invite you to just bring it to mind as clearly as possible. Do your best to remember what it was like to be there. And remember that all parties concerned are just doing the best they can, so are you. We're all trying to find our way. This is not about blame, this is about understanding. Now, ask yourself how this limits you. This defect, this habit, this quality. In what way did this prevent you from showing up the way you feel good about it? In what way did it create harm for yourself or others? How did it limit you in some way? Being very clear about this, deepen your understanding to see the limitations, the harm that was done. It's incredibly courageous that we can recognize this, to learn from this. It's not who we are, it's just how it showed up that day. And I invite you to look more deeply now. Ask yourself, why do you think you acted or reacted that way? Did not do whatever it is you were going to. What was underneath? Now just taking a moment to step back and observe the situation. Stepping back the scenes in front of you. Now we ask, in this situation, what would be a healthy way to act or be? Just taking a moment to just step aside and allow that answer without that defect or shortcoming? What are the potentials of responding or acting differently? What would that look like? What's a potential positive outcome of responding or acting in this way? And here, are you willing? Now make a commitment that from this moment, to the best of your ability, the next time you find yourself with that feeling arising, that type of quality arising, that you will do your best, your very best to act in this healthier, more meaningful way. This is a firm commitment on your part. When you're ready, just bring your awareness forward. All right, we worked quite a bit to get to that, so I hope that there was some clarity there. And this is a practice. With the dynamics on becoming willing. And becoming willing has that place in understanding the limitations, the problems created by that which I'm clinging to. And the opportunity is to understand how it's detrimental. The asking is, in this feeling, in this situation, how could things be different? What should I do? Hopefully everyone got an answer. There's a wonderful opportunity around connection with God, higher power, and answer the divine karma, however we relate to getting out of our own way. And I find that it's often discovered in asking the question, what would be a healthy thing to do? That's different than asking, what should I do? So often that's a problem. I don't know what I should do or what I want to do, and I'm involved. But when we create that space for the answer, what would be a healthy thing to do? She's not asking what I should do. It's much more objective. It's what would be the healthy thing to do. There's amazing clarity that can come to mind. I liked the Road Less Traveled book. Scott Peck talked about grace. You know, you have the answers. They're already there. And we can listen. And making that space in that situation is asking. But we need to be a little removed from it. That's why I had to step out of the picture for a moment. And then, what would be the healthy thing to do? And then embracing that potential. What would be the positives, potentials out of that? What could that be like? And then our commitment. The next time we feel like that, the next time we're in that type of situation, I'm gonna do this other thing. So this is not something that's just a one-off. This is just kind of like a little tenth step you can do every night. When I get home, I think what I'll do is I'll record. I do have one I can give you. But I've got this new mic, so kind of eager to use it. Nice sound. And I'll make sure everyone gets a copy. But the opportunity here is to bring some conscious attention instead of habitual way of living into my habits and tendencies so that I can do this on a daily basis. If we want to build a house, we've got to build a house. And if I'm only engaged in healthy activities when I'm suffering, I'm always just patching a roof. It's always going to leak. And so the invitation here on steps 6 and 7, which we can turn into a 10 easily, is this real quest of meeting God where God is for us. You know, the 10th step they talk about this daily inventory and we're wrong pumping, but this is much more of willingness to change, seeking the answer and the connection. The help's always there, the answer's always there. What's in the way is some of our habits and our patterns that we want to let go of. Or maybe we don't want to let go of, but we are willing to. And so this little practice is a really potent, transformative experience of becoming willing and letting go, understanding, taking action. So I do hope that you got some insight out of that 10 minutes. And want to check in here and see. We've got just a little bit of time left. Great. Yeah, thank you, Mary. So Jane here, I know what the healthy thing to do would be, but I anticipate a lot of anxiousness that would block me from doing it for sure. How do we work with that? And that is spot on question. The meditation is how we start to work with that, as we start practicing doing it in the meditation. So I know that this situation comes up a lot. So I'm going to meditate. I know what the thing is. And in the meditation, I practice doing that next healthy thing and see myself doing it, making that. So I can practice in the comfort of the meditation. And then when the situation comes up, what I'm doing is I'm front loading my healthy action practicing with that. And so I'll feel the anxiousness, but I'll practice doing it anyway. And then, you know, when it comes up, maybe I will just do it. And know that being anxious is just part of the deal. So, but it may take a few meditation sessions to get there. So the more that I do this practice with a specific event, the easier it will be to actually follow through. Because the anxiety and the stuff that arises, then I practice. So I'm going to do this, and I know why I'm going to do this, and I know how important it's going to be. And so I'm practicing in the safety of my own little meditation. I'm not in the situation. And that will build a certain inertia and some stability in my mind so that when I am there, I'll be more able to follow through. So it's doing it a few times. A classic example, actually, where it's not, it's just habit versus anxiousness is, you know, one guy that I've worked with who, you know, he had this issue of just road rage, car issue. He's a loving guy. He's a therapist. He's helped lots of people. Get him in a car, he's just a maniac, yelling, screaming. But he would practice this before he got in the car. And then he practiced being kind to other people on the road. And it sounds simple, but it was huge. It was, you know, it was decades of life for him that he couldn't change. So that's in a situation like that. Anxiety would be a little different, but it's the same process of just getting used to it in the safety of a meditation. Okay. So those questions. And anyone, let's see, little chat box here. Okay, well, thank you. Everybody's writing some nice notes here. We're coming up on the hour. So, just want to see if there's any last questions for a wrap. I've been reading all these. These are mostly comments, and I appreciate that. Okay, so we are coming up on the hour. I do want to thank you for your time. I did record this, so I will have an audio of that. So I'll make that available if anyone would like. Just let me know. And I will make a recording of this meditation that we'll make available to you. I do want to thank all of you for, like I said, all the donations, kind of the way of compassion. And we're starting a little recovery resources that will, when you go to that webpage in the future, there'll be additional, like, just meditations and practices and different things that we can do around the 12 steps. So that'll all be available for anyone. That's the goal, is to create a whole bunch of resources for people in recovery that are accessible. And so really appreciate that from all of you. And the big thing that I also want to just remind us as we get ready to end our time is to catch our mind about the habits and the labels we have for ourselves. In fact, where you are today is incredible from where you came from. And one of the things to inventory if we're doing a 10th step is all the healthy things you do every day. Not just the things you don't feel good about. If you're doing an inventory at the grocery store, you're going to inventory the fruit that's good as well as the fruit that's bad. Our big issue in life is that we often don't see our own good. We don't see how hard we try. We don't see what we've had to show up for. So please, if you do a daily 10th step of any sorts, be sure to put down all the inventory of some good things that you did today, some ways that you were helpful, and a lot of ways that you were not harmful today. How do you define humility? I'd probably look it up in a dictionary, but the way it manifests for me is recognizing the value in others. So for me, humility is recognizing I'm a, no better, no less than I'm a part of. And it's tied to self-worth. It's not less than, you know, there's that old saying, it's not thinking of yourself less, it's thinking of, no, not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And understanding your connection with others and all beings. So humility, recognizes our shared value. That's when it shows up for me anyway. All right. Well, thank you all so much. Good to see some old names I hadn't seen in a long time. Sally and Bree and a bunch of others there. Real gift. We will be having some more of these coming up, and we'll make sure that you're on the email list for recovery resources. We'll be adding free things and meditations and hopefully some resources. I do hope that you all are healthy and well, that you're taking good care of yourselves. And if there's ever anything that we can do, you please let us know. Okay. So just taking a moment, I'm going to close with a moment of sending you all a lot of love and kindness, gratitude. May we all continue to flourish in our recovery. May we find the support we need when we need it. May we offer the support we have when we have it. But let us recognize that it is in unity and togetherness that we're able to have the lives that we get in recovery, and may we all discover our own worthiness and value to recognize our inherent goodness and let that be predominant in our experience and how we show up each day. All right. Thank you all so much. Please be well, and don't be strangers. I like that, DW, humility and honest appraisal of oneself and my place in the world. Thanks, Jane, Bree, DW, Velma, Trish, Tish. I think that's Mary Lou and Bill, Brian, Anna, Carol, all kinds of names up here. Henry, thanks for hanging in there from Ireland. Jamie, Jessica, Joe. Hey, Joe. Victor was probably there too. Colleen. Susan Kinn, Tish, hope you are well. Velma, thank you. Denise, I don't know if I'm getting everybody's name here. They're all going by pretty quick. Cindy, Dulcie, hey Dulcie. Denise, Leslie, Linda. These names are going by too quick. Big turnout today. Nalana, and Nick, hopefully you found this meaningful. Welcome. And, yeah, Nalana, good to have you here. And John, and I don't know if I'm getting everybody's name. Hopefully I didn't miss anybody. People are signing off quick. Mary. Thank you all so much. Joy to have you here. Okay, I'm going to sign out now. Just send you all my love and good thoughts. Be well.